Hands on Miami was in that civic engagement space, and so was City Year. And your current president, Jim, right now, what's Jim's last name?
Bouts. Did I pronounce it right, Karen?
So Karen, yeah, I think I told Karen a native story. We met together with Anna Mori and Jim at my favorite place in the world, Cafe Demetrio, in Coral Gables, and we talked about, you know, the engagement in the community and being involved, and you know, some of the concerns that some of my folks have heard around the country about City Year coming in and not playing very nice in the sandbox with other nonprofits. Being really honest with you. And Jim looked at me, and across the table, we shook hands and we said, well, let's make Miami the place where that doesn't happen and that we have a great partnership. And literally from that day forward, I did everything I could do to help City Year get started here in Miami, and been a huge, huge fan and been to many of your MLK Day projects, and been a phenomenal, phenomenal experience for me and for this community. So, you know, thank you for being here this morning, and I'm looking forward to chatting. I can't hear you, Renee. I can't hear you.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Pat.
No, I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you. You were talking, but I couldn't hear you.
Oh, I just letting people in. I'm admitting them. So then I'll
all right,
go ahead.
Good. So that was kind of my intro. Do you want me to just keep talking, or are people going to ask questions, or how do you want to do it?
Okay, so the first things about you, which obviously how you got connected. So I'm going to go ahead and put up the screen now. I think everyone should be there by now. Okay, there you go. Everyone should be in their screen. Let me just make sure before I share my screen. Okay, there you
love
go.
Love that logo in the background.
Oh, thanks. We have to have marketing. Very important. Yes. Okay, so obviously you shared a little bit about you, your background, and pretty much it's like, how did you get here? Who inspired you? Did you have any mentors? Did you seek out any mentors, Pat? Your journey until how you got here. And then if you could, just due to timing to your job that you're currently doing and the current transition that you guys are having, and how your experience that has led you here from your education to your background to your life, how have you been able to lead in our community? Through resilience and perseverance through these difficult times that we have now, because those are the skills we want our AmeriCorps members and all of us to get out from all of these speaker series.
Absolutely.
So go ahead.
Great. Super, super. So I grew up as a New Yorker. I grew up in Long Island, a place called Hicksville, New York, on Long Island. And I grew up in a family that were volunteers. You know, my mom volunteered at our church, and we were members of the Irish American Society. We went every Sunday or Saturday with my grandfather. We did volunteer projects. We worked Knights of Columbus at church. My dad was very involved in politics and in civic life in our community. So I'm just one of those people, like many, who just grew up seeing it in front of me. And it was not unnatural for me to start volunteering, you know, back in high school. I moved from in my junior year of high school, I moved from New York to Pennsylvania, to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Very, shall we say, provincial part of the country. A little kind of on the redneck side. I think it maybe still is if you get outside a little bit of Harrisburg. A lot different than a New York kid would ever be used to. One of the first experiences I had was in, I believe it was October. I started high school in August. In October, there was a bad flood in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, which is about 2.5 hours from Harrisburg. I went over with about 25 kids from my high school, and we were digging out people's basements. An earthen dam had exploded, and all the water came down the mountain and into people's houses. And I remember standing in a senior citizen's home the second day on Sunday and putting mud in buckets and taking the buckets up the stairs from the basement and throwing into her backyard. And I remember her and her, I can remember this now, many years ago, husband holding on to each other, crying, saying, if these kids were not here, we never would have been able to move back into our house. I mean, that's, you know, 40 years ago for me, more. And I can remember that. And that, the power of volunteerism and one individual working with a handful of other people had such a profound effect on me in that basement in, you know, Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Sounds crazy, but true story, that I went on to, you know, volunteer in college, I volunteered up in New York. I was involved in my alumni association in New York, got involved with Make-A-Wish Foundation, got involved with the organization in New York, which was called City Cares, that ended up when I moved to Miami in 1990. I started Hands of Miami in 1993 based on the model that I had been involved in with New York City. So I started Hands of Miami in 93, 94 through my engagement with the Leadership Miami program. And also I got very involved with the Make-A-Wish Foundation up in New York. I've done probably maybe 40, 50 wishes, everybody from Mr. T to Michael J. Fox to Gloria Estefan to Dan Marino about four times. A lot of people you'd know locally. And I got to tell you, again, one of those inspiring things, I had a little kid who had liver cancer, and it was at Pro Player Stadium, Dolphin Stadium back then. And Dan Marino was the wish. The kid wanted to meet this kid. He came from Iowa. And again, one of those experiences I have as a volunteer that stayed with me for the rest of my life. There was a reporter from the Miami Herald came up to us and said, "Hey, what's going on here?" And we said, "Well, this is a Make-A-Wish kid. He's got a terminal illness, and Dan Marino is his wish. He wanted to see Dan Marino." And so he was with his brother, who was actually, he was actually older than, he was actually younger than him, but because of the liver cancer, he was actually about three, maybe 7 or 8 inches taller. And so he went over and whispered to his brother, and I could just hear what he said. He said, "Could you go first?" Because he had been watching Dan Marino throw these rockets on the field, and he was afraid that if his hero, Dan Marino, threw him a football, he might drop it. So Dan Marino, his brother, he said, my brother's going to go first. And I remember this, his name, the brother was Kyle and this kid was Tommy. And Kyle went down in his stance and Dan Marino said, "You know, ready, set, hut, hut." And he goes out and he throws the ball a little high. And the guy jumps up and misses it. And Dan Marino goes, "This arm's not what it used to be. Let me try that again." And so his brother went down again and he threw the ball to him. And then the reporter, a guy named Dave Barry, and they might know him from the Miami Herald, leans over and says, What exactly is this Make-A-Wish?" I said, "Well, Make-A-Wish is an organization that works with kids that have terminal illnesses to make their wish come true. And, you know, we like to say that the doctors provide the medicine and Make-A-Wish provides the wish. And together we often see some miracles happen." And then Dan Marino says, "Okay, Tommy, your turn." And he goes down, he, you know, sends out his call, ready, set, hike. And the little boy goes running out. And Dan Marino throws this ball in the air, and it is like a pillow or a feather floating in the air. This little guy jumps up about 4 feet in the air and catches this ball. And that Sunday, the next week, Dave Barry wrote in the Miami Herald, "It was the finest pass I've ever seen completed by Dan Marino." And I got to tell you, seeing that happen, again, was an amazing experience for me as a volunteer. It made me understand how one person, just like many of you watching this year, City Year AmeriCorps members, one person has a huge opportunity to make an impact on the kid, the little boy, the little girl sitting in front of you at that exact moment. You never, never, ever know what that impact is going to be. But those are my two experiences that I talk about. Happened a long time ago, but they're ones that I remember. And I keep putting as part of kind of who I am, quite frankly, and volunteering is a big part. I moved to Miami in 1990. I got involved in the community. I didn't really know anybody. I knew one person, a guy whose name is Steve Leifman, who's a county court judge, was running for elected office. I took a leap of faith and came down to work on his campaign, and I got what many people get called sand in my shoes, and I decided to stay. And got a job with the Miami Beach Chamber of Commerce just when South Beach was coming back from 90 to 91 to 94. I worked there. Always been involved in the community, helped get Hands on Miami started during that time. And so, you know, I studied international relations and business and marketing in school. But, you know, what I have done later in my life, you know, all of that education was important and critical. But there were so many other things that were important in my success. Not, you know, that I got a B or an A or an F or a D or whatever on some test in college or in graduate school. It was the relationships I built. It was the friendships I built. I think Miami, like any town in America, but particularly Miami, is, you know, we're a relatively young place, just over 100 years. And, you know, when I lived in New York and, you know, I know Karen can say this about Philadelphia and certainly the case in Boston, you know, if you're not from some family or the right connections in a bank or a law firm or accounting firm, you know, you're not going to get involved in an organization at some senior level. Those are kind of kept for people who have been around for a long time. That is not the case in Miami. If you are not, I mean, I'll be really frank with you, a BS artist, and you show up and you do the work, you can do anything in this town. And I think that is reflective of a lot of towns that you may go back to after your city, your experience. But for sure, you know, showing up, saying you're going to do it and doing it, you know, there is no doubt about it in my mind that you're ahead of 90% of the people who talk about it and talk about it and talk about it, and the buses pass them and they don't even realize that the bus came by. So that's the biggest piece. And I think, you know, we're in a different world than we were before coronavirus, but networking and, you know, personal relationships is always going to be incredibly successful. I have can say this truly. I've never looked for a job in my life because I've always had a job as a relationship. I haven't always had good jobs, but I've always had a job where the next job came because somebody called me and said, hey, there's an opportunity here. You might want to think about this. And it led to the next job. So, you know, I say that to you, cast your network as wide as you can. While you're in city year, I think one of the things you can do, and many of you have done for sure, is again, and going forward into the your post-city year experience, you know, continue to work on your network, continue your friendships with your AmeriCorps members. Who knows where they're going to end up, all around the country or in Miami. And build those relationships, because at the end of the day, it's all about people to people, whether it's a Zoom meeting, a Skype meeting, a WebEx, you know, it's all about building relationships, being honest with people. I think the one thing for me that I learned a long time ago, and I learned it actually from my dad. And my dad said to me something that has stuck with me a long time, and I take it to maybe another level, but always surround yourself with people smarter than you. And that's not uncommon advice, but it's one he gave me that I remember. Now, there's a lot of stuff he gave me that I didn't pay attention to, I can promise you that. And maybe in retrospect, I should have, but at least that one is one that he always told me about. And he did that in his career, and I've done that at mine. And the one thing for sure I can tell you is that, you know, it's the folks that you're going through right now, your relationships you're building with now, that you have in 10, 20, 30 years from now. These are folks that you're going to have as a relationship for many, many years. So, you know, stay close to them, be friends with them, be honest with them. And the other thing too is, you know, we can't all be good at everything. That's the one thing I learned early on in my career. We can't all be good. What's your strength? And how do you make your strength even the strongest it can be? And those stuff that you're not good at, I mean, we all got to get a little better at it, but, you know, I mean, we're not going to be experts at everything. It's just impossible. So how do you really be known as somebody who's good at, go to Ana for this, go to Zoe for this, go, because you know the skills they have. So how do you become that go-to person? Figure out what you're good at. Get really, really good at it. Figure out the stuff that you're great at. Get even better than great. And the stuff that you're not that good at, you know, like figure out a way to get a little bit better at it. I know for me, you know, one of the Make-A-Wish experiences that I had, and again, this is an honest to God story. I did not mind talking to people one-on-one. I did not like talking in front of groups. I got sweats. My hands got all clammy. It just was not my thing. And when I started getting involved with the Make-A-Wish Foundation, I was asked, would I go to the Rotary Club and speak about Make-A-Wish? Would I go to Kiwanis? And I know the first couple of times, like I had to hit the bathroom before I went in to speak because my stomach was so nervous. And then I realized, you know, I knew more about the Make-A-Wish Foundation than anybody in that room. So I really was the expert. And so after doing literally, I probably did over a 3-year period, probably 40 different times I spoke about Make-A-Wish. And now I could stand up anytime, anywhere and speak only because I pushed through, quite frankly, my fear of speaking in front of the public. And realize that if you know your topic, then maybe you're going to get a tough question or two. I mean, in my case, I never did, but you know, you're going to get a tough. But if you know this and you're preparing for it, that's something we should all do. And if you have those opportunities through City Year, I would really encourage you to, you know, develop that skill. That's a really important skill to hear. Now I see that.
Go ahead. We have some questions.
Hi, Pat. It's Zoe. Hope you're well.
Hey, Zoe. How are you, Zoe?
Hey. Good, good, good. Thank you so much for speaking about your vulnerabilities, because that's actually something that the Corps is building on with learning and development and just building on themselves as people. So appreciate that. And we do have a question for you, actually a few questions. This one is from Ashley Barrett. Any advice for anyone wanting to start their own nonprofit one day?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the things you're doing now is you're learning those skills. Like, how are you built? You know, if you look at what a nonprofit is, it's a small business, right? Karen and Zoe, and they can tell you that, right? And so they've been, you know, not just with City, but with other nonprofits. So it's a small business. So what are the skills that you're learning that you need to run a nonprofit? They're the same skills you learn to run a small business. So there's a lot of material out there that you can be reading. You can be going online, you can be going to workshops on, you can be going to courses on. Philanthropy Miami here in Miami is a great place. There's also a phenomenal organization up in Palm Beach called Nonprofits First. If you're not familiar with that, go to that. You know, looking at BoardSource up in Washington, D.C., there's different associations for nonprofits. Educate yourself. And also within the city of your experience, make sure you're talking to the people who are doing your strategic planning, who's doing operations, who's doing fundraising, who are doing those, you know, the marketing, right? The PR, the social media, all of those are elements that are in any small business. They're just tweaked a little bit in the nonprofit. And so I would tell you that, you know, the best way to start a nonprofit is to make sure you understand the nonprofit. It's not easy running a nonprofit executive. You know, as a lot of the ladies on this phone, on this call are surely shaking their head while I'm talking, Zoe and Karen and hey, you know, it is not easy to run a nonprofit, right? So yeah, I see Zoe's head there. And so, you know, you got to make sure you know what you're doing. The biggest thing I can tell you is, you know, there are a lot of people out there that are doing really great things in the community. Why start something new for your ego if in fact somebody else is doing something that your talent and your help may help them get to the next level? So I think you just need to look very carefully at what it is that you're doing. You know, in the environmental space, in the kids space, in the senior space, there's a lot of nonprofits out there. You know, quite frankly, there are a lot of nonprofits that, you know, I'm sad to say, you know, may not make it as a result of this COVID-19 virus. You know, we say that nonprofits, or the auditors say, you know, have to have anywhere from 3 to 6 months of operating reserves to get through a rainy day. Well, this is the most thunderous rainy day that I can imagine I've ever seen a nonprofit go through. And, you know, I've gone through other ones, Zika, when I ran Hands on Miami and others. So, you know, I know what I'm talking about, and gone through some hurricanes too as a nonprofit exec. So some nonprofits won't make it out the other end, sadly. And hopefully, you know, maybe what they'll be doing is looking at partnering with other nonprofits to get stronger as they go through it. So Zoe, I'm sorry, there's a couple of other ones on there too.
There are, and thank you for that, Pat. You actually spoke a little bit to the second question, but if you could just focus a bit more on Miami. This is Ashley Roman's question. What is the best way to network or interact with other local nonprofits here in Miami?
But I got to tell you, there are so many nonprofits that know what City Year is all about. City Year, Karen and Zoe and Anae and others, again, going back to Keith Fletcher and Saif and certainly Franklin, that have, you know, you've got a brand in our community that is so huge. Where are there opportunities for you to collaborate and partner with some of the other nonprofits in town? I know City Year's got, you know, great, amazing partnership in the MLK Day Project with schools. You know, what are other programs that you might be able to spend a little time helping, or just calling them and getting to know? Anybody who, you know, I will tell you, I'm a very reachable guy, and I'll make sure that Anae and Zoe and Karen know that, you know, anybody who wants to reach me, they can pass on my email to them. I'm happy to have a more detailed conversation and you know, talk to them about it. But there are a lot of events that are going on. And again, after this COVID-19 thing, we'll see how that sorts out. But there are chamber things. There are things that are going on in the community at the Center for Social Change and Venture Cafe that are really focused on building skills and building relationships. So I think, you know, it's really just looking at where those opportunities are and getting out. And you know, there's a lot of young professional groups. I know Pace Center for Girls has one, and you know, there's many others that have Venture Cafe. Someone just mentioned, Sherry just mentioned that. Great, great place. I haven't been there in a while, but I used to be a every other week fixture at their Thursday night, that's how we say adult beverages are served there. So there's some great networking that goes on there too. So I would recommend that as a great place to start. But, you know, a lot of it is just, you know, is not talking about it, is just doing it. And, you know, you sign up to be at a 6 o'clock event, you know, be there at 15 minutes before, that's when the networking happens. So anyway, sorry about that. Go ahead, Zoe.
No worries. Just one last question for you, just wrapping up, because we do want to respect your time and as well as
I'm fine. I'm sorry. I got late, so I'm good.
No worries. This is a deep one for you. What would you consider sometime in your career that you failed forward? That something happened that you thought was a failure, but looking back, hindsight, it was actually a great opportunity. If you could share that with us.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be very honest with you, you know, I've had lots of them. And I think I've learned from some of them. In probably more than anything. And generally speaking, again, I'm being very honest with you guys, you know, some of my biggest failures is that I'm a very trusting guy. And I have a lot of friends. And I always give people the benefit of the doubt. Maybe four or five or six times. And so the most heartbreaking ones were the ones where I really trusted somebody and they did not live up to the trust that I put in them. And so, you know, it's a blind spot that I have learned from. As my wife tells me all the time, you didn't really learn from that, did you, Pat? But the reality I have, but I think if I look at the three or four or five times in again, my career, both in banking and in the nonprofit world, it's when, you know, I trusted and didn't verify is maybe the best way to describe that. That are some of the ones that I learned the most on that hurt the most. And, you know, some of the setbacks and some of the things I was doing, even in my Hands on Miami days, you know, someone who I had as a staff member who I trusted and really thought was a brother turned out not to be the case. And, you know, upon reflection, some of those signs were there, but because of my, you know, quite frankly, trusting nature, I just didn't see them and other people did. And, you know, and upon reflection, other people who had said something to me, I kind of, you know, poo-pooed a little bit because, you know, my instincts were to trust them. And so anyway, I think that's something that I've developed in my gut a little bit to, you know, trust and verify. And that's not a bad skill for everybody to have.
I okay. love that. Thank you so much, Pat. We just have one more question. Sure. And then we'll wrap up. What would you say is the biggest lesson you've learned in your career thus far?
Oh, for sure. That's an easy one. It's all about people. It's all about relationships and friendships. And, you know, I moved to Miami and I knew two people. I knew Judge Lifman, who I've gone to America University with. We were roommates together. We were our resident advisors together. And he came back, went to FSU Law School, became a public defender, decided to run for the state legislature back in 1990. And I took a leave of absence to come down and work on his campaign. And the other guy I knew is a guy who's a banker. His name is Bert De Armas. And when I was a banker up in New York for Chase Manhattan Bank, he and his then girlfriend were friends with a woman who I had gone to school with at American. They were going to Columbia. And so I took these three starving graduate school folks out to dinner. And so Bert and I became fast friends, Cuban American guy from Miami. And so when I moved back to Miami, I only knew Steve and Bert. Now Bert has said, yeah, Pat paid for dinner one time and I've been paying for it ever since. And that is probably a very good description of that relationship that I have with him. But literally, you know, I knew two people when I moved here and I decided to stay and, you know, move back up to New York, got all my stuff, came back down here in 1991. I worked at the head of the membership for the Miami Beach Chamber for 4 years, but it's all about the relationships. It's all about people I've met. You know, good people, bad people, you know, I've got them in my network and, you know, I've got, all different types of friendships that are from all over the place. And I think the single best thing you can do is be real in your relationships, be honest with people and, you know, help them and, you know, be a giver, not a taker. I mean, at the end of the day, be a giver, not a taker. I haven't been involved with Make-A-Wish guys in probably, I mean, I write my little check every year, but I haven't done a wish in maybe, I'll be honest, 15 years, probably 12, 15 years. I still have people that come up to me and ask me how Make-A-Wish is doing. I mean, it's been 15 years ago. People, you know, I've been involved with Hands of Miami in quite a while. People still ask me about Hands of Miami. So all I know is that my interactions with them were genuine. It was never Pat Morris asking on behalf of Pat Morris. It was ask on behalf of Make-A-Wish or Hands of Miami or City Year or whoever it is that your passion is. You know, show that passion in the organizations you love. Show the passion in what you do at City Year. I mean, tell you, when I do the, you know, City Year's in the house, people look at me and they wonder, like, what the heck is he doing? Every single person from City Year does a hoop or whoop and puts their hands up. They know exactly what I'm talking about because that's an experience that you were having with AmeriCorps members, not just City Year, but all AmeriCorps members all around the country. And let me tell you, it is an experience that is going to touch your soul for the rest of your life. And it's something that's going to make you a better person and a better community leader wherever that community ends up being for you down the road. So thank you all so much for giving me the time to talk to you. And, you know, I love City Year and keep doing your work. You're doing God's work, but you're doing work that every single community in this country and this world needs now more than ever.
Pat, thank you so much from all of us. We only have about 3 minutes because it's Zoom and it's really timed. However, we have about 21 questions I see in the chat box. So we're going to conclude this and then I'll connect with you to see if we could record the rest of the Q&As.
I'd be happy to.
And sure. Then we share with everyone out there and we'll see if we could connect soon. If we need to do another one, then we'll do it again.
Be happy to do it. You guys be safe out there, right? Put the mask on, the gloves, social distancing. We'll have plenty of time to get together again. It may be a little later than sooner. So
thanks again. Thanks again, Pat. Thanks again, everyone.
All right. City Year. Woohoo.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Bye.